Never forget, feign a shirt for fanatic.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we have guest Delia Jordan here with us to discuss Brandon Sanderson's Wind and Truth and how he seems really accepting of things his church isn't.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
It's me, his wife.
And Tim Wick.
I will be virtually useless on this episode.
As opposed to all the other episodes.
Where, exactly. No.
This week, we have a new guest with us, friend of the show, Delia Waldorf is here. Hi, Delia.
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
It's going great. I'm excited about this episode. We have kind of arranged this one like at the end of the year. And because of vacations and holidays and needing to finish a book, we are only getting around to it now.
Why, what are we talking about, Nick?
We are going to talk about Wind and Truth, the latest Stormlight Archive book from Brandon Sanderson. It's a doorstopper.
We're going to start talking about book five.
We're going to start by talking about book five. We're going to probably talk about a lot of the Stormlight Archive books. We'll try to keep it Stormlight-centric. I realize that, you know, if you haven't read these books and you're not as familiar with them, we're basically spoiling something like 250 or 400 hours of audiobook for you, if that's how you're measuring it, right? So go take listening to books as a part-time job for a couple months and then come back to this episode or read it with your eyes if you'd prefer. So we are going to spoil some stuff, but there are a lot of really relevant themes and topics, especially in this last book, for an atheist geek podcast that pays a lot of attention to social justice issues. So
Delia, Nick, and I have all three of us read all five books. Tim has read zero of the books, and so it's going to be very cool questions. Tim, I expect lots of questions like, who's that?
Yeah. I'll be like, can you fill in some of the details on this in a spoiler fashion? So yeah.
You're the stand in for the audience who hasn't read it. So you gotta
skeptic.
You gotta help yeah. them by going, what?
Yeah, well I'll ask all sorts of questions like, isn't Brandon Sanderson like a Mormon or something? I think I'll just say that a lot.
Yes. we're now going to enter spoiler territory.
Dun, dun, dun.
Series. So, as Tim just mentioned, Brandon Sanderson's a Mormon. He belongs to the Church of Latter-day Saints. He lives in Salt Lake City. He teaches at Brigham Young University. He teaches writing.
He's not just like a born into it or cultural Mormon. He is actively in the church.
Very active. His faith is clearly very important to him, and I would say his values. That said, I mean, for lack of a better word, Wind and Truth is woke as fuck, I guess, is what the jerks say online.
I'd agree with that, definitely.
I feel like Wind and Truth is there were a lot of times when reading it that I was like, this is a man struggling with a church. This is written by a man who is struggling with the impositions put upon him by a church, not necessarily his faith, but like the dogma of the LDS.
I think especially with Adolin in this book, with a couple of the characters in this book, there's a really big thing talking about the pledges one makes to belong to an organization and how they can be counter to your own personal beliefs and how you juggle those obligations of oath and promise and the differences between things like that. And I mean, I don't think he necessarily provides an answer, but he clearly says that it's not just one. Like, you can, a person can hold conflicting beliefs. They can belong to an organization where they don't jive with it 100%.
Very convenient for his book to have the opinion that you can hold conflicting beliefs, and that's okay. You still buy your books and not worry about where you're tithing.
It's a legitimate concern. He certainly tithes to the church. Wind and Truth, two characters that have been subtly flirting through the last four books or so, become an official magic couple in this book. Two men.
You should point out, yeah.
Two men, Relaine and Renarin. People have accused Sanderson of gay baiting with those characters, queer baiting, and like putting out signals and stuff and never really delivering on it. And he certainly delivered on it. They are as official as it gets in this book. Eventually.
I mean, they're not like, there's not, they make it sound like you say they're fucking. They're not, it's like, well, they're romantically together. There's a lot of sex in these books.
There's not a lot of fucking in these Mormon books.
No,
Is there like hand holding? Is there kissing?
Okay.
Yes, very much so.
Well, then I don't know. That's good. That's good enough for me.
Safe hands.
And you know, it's really funny. You talk about how this book got really, really clear and blunt about it. And I feel like anybody who's been reading the previous books, as the buildup has gone, if they caught any of the hints of it moving in, they probably had the exact same reaction as I did, which was absolutely squeen the moment that it just became bluntly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that was in game or in book too.
Yeah.
One character is kind of observing this finally happening in a semi-magical way, and is definitely like, with it finally happening.
Tim, in this world, Roshar, the Alethi women, which is the main, I don't know, ethnic group we're following. Ethnic group?
It's like kingdom. It's a country. It's an ethnicity. Yeah. It's a continent. And it's also the name of the... Oh, no, that's Roshar.
The women, they cover their left hands completely in like big pouch sleeves. That's called their safe hand. And they don't do anything with that hand. Like they're not allowed to show it. So like Alethi porn would be like a woman like peeling off a glove on her left hand.
Ooh,
holding has a lot more significance, which it's very funny because for a Mormon author to somehow make hand holding more transgressive and sexy is very ridiculous. It's so obvious that it's like, what if holding hands was like crazy though? What if that was like so sick.
And like a hand job from someone with their right hand is mid, but if they use their left hand, it's like extra special and hot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, hypothetically, like,
I'm going to blank on names all night tonight. It's just going to happen. I'll come back to that.
Yeah. They discuss trans characters in this book. There is a point where they're interviewing people to join up with the ranks in a town that's being attacked, and a person steps up and Adolin, you know, greets them, and they're like, oh, you know, actually, she, and he is like, oh, and looks at their government ID, which has had the gender updated on the government ID with the like legal paperwork to back it. Yep. And he doesn't even skip a beat. He switches pronouns right away and is just like, but of course.
It's a country with a lot of paperwork and bureaucracy where those, if you fill out the right forms, you can pretty much do anything. And then there's what I liked about that was there's one character who's, you know, born female and is transitioning to male and wants to fight.
Right. That's
and then there's another character who he says, do you have your papers? because he assumes this is another, you know, trans man character. And this, she says, no, that's not me. I just want to fight. And it's like, oh, and it's like, so she's not, they make it very clear. Like this one person is trans. That is a man. He wants to fight. This other girl, she just wants to fight. She doesn't want to transition. And she's like, I guess I could go try to get papers if I have to, but she doesn't want to. And it was very subtle and good. I was surprised at that.
It kind of highlighting the difference between like gendered characteristics and gender, right? Like a tomboy isn't necessarily someone that is an trans. Egg that hasn't cracked or yep. someone that's seeking transition. It could just be someone that, celebrates their own gender with a little bit more masculine traits. And they, it's in there. It's in the book.
You know, related to that, in a lot of ways, I think Aesir would probably be one of the coolest places to live on Roshar.
Oh, yeah.
Because as long as you do the paperwork, anybody can be whoever they want to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And college is free and and encouraged by everyone of every class. They have the highest literacy rate on the planet. And they there was something else about them.
No, they let men read.
They let men read.
Oh yeah, that's another thing in the Alethi culture, Tim. So the women don't show their left hand and the men don't read
or write.
Or write. That's considered a feminine art. So men don't read or write, and it's like very shocking when the most powerful man in the Alethi kingdom teaches himself to read and then writes a book, and it's like he wrote a book.
Yeah.
So that's a lady thing.
It's not super deep the way he plays with like these gender norms being different in this other world, but in a way showing us how our own are kind of weird and funny and arbitrary, frankly. Mm-hmm. Whether that's the safe hand or the difference between manly and womanly pursuits in the safe hand and all that. Mm-hmm. But it's still like a part of their culture. It's still reflected. It's still like there are kind of like priests, ardents. They're kind of like educated monks, sort of, who are mad that this character has taught himself to read and writes a book. And at the same time, they're like, well, but you're also a high prince, and I have to, serve you all the same, and I have to recognize who you are. You're almost a sort of magical messiah come again, in a sense. We have to recognize that things are going to be different, and they kind of have to get over their shit.
The religion in these books, I think, is really interesting. And because they all know that gods are real. There was one true God. He got split into 16 shards. And so there are 16 shards of this one true God. And the shards all kind of control different planets in the Cosmere, which is their word for the universe. So on Roshar, which is the planet that Stormlight takes place on, the gods there, they all know they exist, but certain cultures worship different aspects of them to some degree. So these Alethi that we've been talking about that are the main focus of the Stormlight Archive, they believe at the beginning of these books that there is the Almighty. There's just this guy, he's the Almighty, he does the storms, it's a big deal. And so there's this lot of fighting about whether or not there's a main character who's an atheist. She says she doesn't believe in God. She doesn't think that if there is a God, it's obviously not very powerful because it couldn't be the way they talk about everybody. And I think that at first, her name's Yasna. At first, she's written very clumsily. She's written with a Mormon's idea of what an atheist is, for sure. But I think with all of his books, he obviously started to talk to people, whether they were his friends or just people that he sought out, to learn more about different things. And these books cover a lot of different things. There's depression. There's dissociative identity disorder. There's atheism. There's feminism. There's transgender issues. There are gay and lesbian relationships. There's a non-binary character. I mean, there's a lot of things that obviously this extremely sheltered Mormon man who lives in Salt Lake City isn't going to know without seeking it out. And he talks a lot. He's very transparent about the way that he's sought out beta readers and people to help him to talk to and to get their stories and to kind of help to fill in the gaps of his knowledge with his writing. It's very cool.
Now, I do want to interrupt real quick there because I actually have a little bit of a personal story.
Correct.
So a number of years ago, when Brandon was writing the end of the Wheel of Time, I was part of the local tour for the Gathering Storm, which meant I got to hang out with Brandon and I got to have lunch with Brandon and it was really cool. Well, when I came out as trans, I've been Facebook friends with him ever since.
Oh, that's
when
great.
When I came out as trans, I messaged him and going, "Hey, you met me one way before, but I wanted to tell you this is who I am now."
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, it's nice to meet you again, Delia."
Oh, that's so great.
That's amazing.
That's so great.
The man works hard to include everybody and to get perspective. I think that's a fundamental strength of his, actually.
Yeah.
Tim.
Well, and I think we've mentioned this before, and I want to allow us to get back to the books, but there's sort of a fundamental disconnect with somebody who's tithing their income to a church that is anti these things, that it is very clearly anti-gay, anti-trans. And it's like, how do you balance that? And it's almost like he's writing these books as a way to be like, well, I can still be for these things, even if my church isn't. I don't know. That's something that I wonder about, you know, and as a writer myself, I certainly write about a lot of things I don't know anything about. I write religious characters. I write characters that are queer and I'm not, and I try to find ways to understand those characters and do it in a way that's understanding. But at the same time, it's like trying to balance, you know, his response to Delia with the fact that he's financially supporting something that is diametrically opposed to that response.
In fact, the Mormon Church has something called the Family Proclamation. You can find it online if you just search for, you know, the family, a proclamation to the world. It's a long blog post basically from the church.
Do you remember when was it posted?
I don't know. And there's not a date on it. It was first written on gold tablets that someone dug up in their backyard.
A ghost.
So here, just two snippets of it, right? Just to kind of drive home what we're saying. These are direct quotes. Marriage between a man and a woman is ordained of God. Gender is an essential characteristic of an individual, premortal, mortal, and eternal identity and purpose. And God has given it to you.
Oh, I see. It's not gender because we decide what that is. It's right. It's biological sex. Is
so
what they mean.
It's a statement from the church basically saying we don't recognize trans people, we don't recognize gay marriage. Like that's what it comes down to. And some of the most forgiving Mormons you'll find online will say things like, but we're all sinners and the church is a place for sinners too. Mm-hmm. So gay people shouldn't get kicked out of the LDS because how else are they going to learn how to fix themselves without being at church? And they think that's very progressive, some of them. So what Sanderson is doing is diametrically opposed to those statements in that document.
What's interesting is he's making them so much money that they obviously don't give a shit. I wonder how much pressure has he said anything about receiving pressure from his own church?
I've only seen him post about the people that have helped him and been patient with him, which he's talked about a lot.
True.
He's also talked a lot about when he talks about his beta readers and the people that he's consulting for, people that have experiences outside of his that he wants to make sure that he's writing accurately, whether it's mental health or gender identity, he's paying those people too, which is really, I mean, it'd be very easy to just like foist that labor off onto someone and be like, read my book and tell me if I got gay
you
right.
You get to read it early. Isn't that exciting? And yeah,
it's hey, panel of people, here's what I'm doing. Here's how these characters are acting. Is this, you know, sensitive? Is this accurate? Am I being respectful? And then paying them for their time, which is remarkable. He does some other really kind things, like when his staff goes to conventions or is working, they don't work on Sunday. They don't. They
even when the convention has a day on Sunday,
when they had their big, when they, well, he works and his personal staff might work with him, but like at their big convention, Dragonsteel or whatever it's called, I can't remember.
Nexus,
that's right. At Nexus, it was the holiday store. They closed the holiday store for Sundays when they did their big holiday sale.
Why is that good?
Well, because then the people have a day off to relax, so they're not processing orders and boxing things up and shipping them during the busiest season of the year for them. They also didn't do their sale on one day. It wasn't like, okay, the sale goes live on Black Friday and we're going to make our people work for 2 weeks straight to process all these orders. Instead, it was, our sale is going to be for 2 months long, and none of the people that are working this sale or doing this are going to be working on the Sunday of it.
Like, that's the 2 months thing is fine, but why is it any different that Brandon Sanderson doesn't make people work on Sundays versus Chick-fil-A is closed on Sundays?
I mean,
why is one good and the other one is terrible?
No, I don't necessarily think Chick-fil-A being closed on Sundays is terrible.
If people want to work and make money,
then they should find a job that isn't working for that bigot company.
I mean, so what should people do? You know what I mean? Like,
I mean,
what if you're Jewish and you want to work for Brandon Sanderson and you don't want Sunday off, you want a different day off?
Like, maybe he'll find an accommodation. I don't know. Weird. I'm it not just, his yeah, HR department.
It seems like a weird thing to horrify as atheists gives them Sunday off.
The way in which he presented it was both religious. It's his belief that people get a day off to rest, and Sunday is a holy day. But also in his discussion about it on his like weekly YouTube video that he put up when he talked about it, for him it was like a labor thing. It was like these, you know, people get worked to death on Black Friday and sure, on Thanksgiving, and my folks aren't going to do that. They're going to get adequate time off for the holidays.
I get that. Do you feel that there's a cult of personality around Brandon Sanderson, where I feel like I'm absolutely listening to two staunch atheists make a lot of like excuses for this Mormon guy, and it just feels not no shade, but no, like
that's
to you, I know you two both are very plugged into his updates and his videos and like him as a person and his blogs and stuff, where I just read his books. So like, do you feel like that makes you feel more, yeah, like do you have, his personal relationship with him, Delia?
I mean, from my perspective, yeah, there is the aspect of the cult of personality there. There's no doubt about that. People who are fans of his are fans, big capital F on that one. But also, I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that he will stop and he will listen.
Yeah.
Like, he may make a decision initially because it's based in the world he grew up in and the world he lives in. But when someone goes, hey, wait a minute, that's not what things are like, he pivots very well. There's a perfect example of his version of an autistic person in Elantris versus his representation of an autistic person in the Stormlight Archive. Mm-hmm. Obviously, his writing improved much over those years, but also he talked to people and he learned. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why one of the reasons people are fanatic and willing to overlook some minor foibles here and there is because he does put in the work to learn.
I have a lot more patience for people that are clearly putting in an effort to do better. Because everyone fucks up and makes mistakes and you know, doesn't get it right the first time, right? And so when someone is clearly showing an effort that is meaningful, I think that should be recognized. I think people can change and more or less deserve a second chance. I think that there are a lot of things that build this cult of personality for him. The things Delia is talking about, for sure. He is incredibly accessible to fans and is very personable. And if you...
And not in a gross way, like certain authors.
No, for sure. You know, yeah, that's, you know what Brandon Sanderson's big scandal was? Guys, I secretly wrote four books when you weren't looking. It wasn't like I touched someone or had an affair or whatever. It was motherfucker wrote more books.
Do you think that because, I mean, do you feel like because of his beliefs, his Mormon beliefs, yeah. do you feel like that makes him a safer person to develop this cult of personality around? Whereas people like Neil Gaiman, even people like Stephen King or other authors, like I'm always waiting for the next, for the story to break on the next, the person I like to find out that, oh great, now I got, I mean, we just went through this with Gaiman where it was yeah. like all of a sudden all these people are like, oh, you guys didn't know? Everyone's known that. And it's like, what? And I don't, I mean, that's obviously, I doubt we're ever going to get an article in Vulture about, you know, Brandon Sanderson fucking the babysitter, but you know, like what if it happened? Like, would it, you know, yeah. that's it yeah. feels it, does it feel safer because of his religion?
I don't think it's so much his religion as it is who he is personally. And especially for those who have interacted with him directly.
I interacted with Damon directly and thought he was a super good dude.
Same here. Yeah. But there's a difference, and I can't exactly quantify it other than, first and foremost, Brandon Sanderson is the biggest geek I've ever met in my life. Like,
probably so. Like, sometimes.
Yeah, like, he is an absolute, like, he will geek out on anything, especially Magic the Gathering.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also, coming from a church that once had very interesting things to say about Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, they still do. Yeah.
Yeah, they might. It's, you know, it's a very interesting question. Is it safer to like him as a fan because he's Mormon? I hadn't really thought of it that way before, and it's really got me thinking. I think that there are characteristics he has as a person that are probably because of his faith, but I think the safety in appreciating him is because of those characteristics and not because of the faith, mm-hmm. even though those characteristics clearly take influence from his faith. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's,
yeah.
For me, that's what it is. You know, there was backlash about Wind and Truth from fans. I've never seen as many complaints about a Sanderson Cosmere book that just came out as I have Wind and Truth. I haven't seen a ton of people complaining about it being too woke, but I have seen some. And apparently there was backlash enough at the book that he needed to follow up with a blog post about Renarin and Relaine, where he says, you know, no one's making me be woke. No one's giving me a quota. None of my publishers are telling me to insert gay characters. This isn't something that just came out of nowhere. This has been my plan for these characters since book one. This is like, this guy's a planner. Like, I have no mm-hmm. doubt that when he says that, it's accurate. And he, you know, he talks a bit about the schism in his beliefs.
So a big part of Wind and Truth, a big focus of the book is literally therapy. is therapy. There's a character, Kaladin, who does therapy with another character. He then goes on to be a therapist for more characters. And it's talk therapy, but it's also to some degree DBT, like actually like doing dialectical behavioral therapy. Do you think Brandon Sanderson had to go to therapy recently? Like,
100% guarantee that man has gone to therapy.
Well, I know has, but do you think it was a development? And I wonder if it was like, was it marital counseling? Was it like for his own depression? Because it feels like therapy became, I saw a lot of complaints. I didn't see anybody complain about Relaine and Renarin. I saw a mm-hmm. lot of people complain about the therapy aspect because they felt like this book was getting preachy in a non-religious way about how therapy was something everybody needed. And they felt like it was getting, like, it was soft. It was a soft book that all these Alethi people who are a war, they're a war favoring race, or not race, but, you know, culture. They, the men go to war. That's what they do. They fight. The women go to the battlefield with their husbands. They fight. They are a warlike people that are suddenly being softened by therapy, by talking about their feelings,
by magic.
Yeah. And so I saw a lot of people say these books have gotten soft. And what I liked about these were big fucking dudes in giant shard plate armor, kicking each other's asses, killing beasts, slaying their enemies, fucking taking what was theirs, and Game of Thronesing.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I'm sad about my dad and I have to do therapy. And I mean, these are the complaints I read. Yeah. So it's interesting.
That's, I mean, arguably the protagonist of the series, Kaladin, is everyone's favorite sad boy. Kaladin is, starts off the book as like a real badass motherfucker with a spear who can really kill people.
With suicidal ideation.
With not
literally about to kill himself.
Yeah. And by the end of this book, he is a therapist to the gods, more or less. I've seen people complain about that too, and maybe those people haven't noticed some things, other things in these books, like in those first couple books, especially, they are absolutely fucking massacring the Parshendi, the native sentient people of this planet that are predate humans being there.
Which we don't know at that point. All we know is they are eternal enemies.
They're crab men, for lack of a better word. Everything on Roshar is crabs except for things that came with people. Humans. They are the enemy alien race, and they're just getting murdered by the hundreds in the first few books. And by the end of the books, we have this series so far, we have characters with POV and chapters and backstories and flashbacks from those people. They have been, for lack of a better word, humanized. And all of a sudden, maybe you should be realizing as a reader that all of that brutal slaughter that you really enjoyed and thought was badass in those first two books is actually incredibly tragic. And those people are missing that point, I think.
And if Brandon Sanderson is as much of a planner as you say, that's where he was going all along. And whether or not he's been through therapy, and, you know, maybe he has, maybe he hasn't. Probably he has. Let's just say that he was planning this story arc for this point in the story for a long time. It doesn't sound like it would be I went through therapy, so I've therefore decided that I'm going to make this book about therapy. It sounds like he knew that ahead of time.
Yeah, I think it was definitely the idea of like all of this slaughter has been for nothing. You've been killing people. You think you've been killing. It's you know that Black Mirror episode where the soldiers all think they're killing aliens all the time, and then they take off their goggles and they realize that they're actually just like immigrants.
Yes.
And they don't look, they're not aliens. It's the goggles that make them look like aliens, and they've just been killing immigrants. Like, it's like that, I think. They have the goggles on and all they see are crab people. And then later a few things happen that take the goggles off and make you realize, oh, they are oh geez, oh god, the crab people have music and families. Fuck, what have we done? And so I definitely think that was where it was always going. The therapy stuff, I don't want to say it feels tacked on, but it definitely feels newer in this book, in the sense of he actually uses the word therapy and says therapist, because there's a character named Wit who exists, like, I don't know, outside of time and has maybe been to Earth.
Yeah. So, like, yeah. It's there is a quote in the book that is, what are you, a god, his spren? No, I'm his therapist. What does that mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
They're casually about knowing.
Yeah, they don't know what the word therapy is or what therapists are. They just know that's what they've been told, that's what they're doing.
But they do describe something called warrior thoughts, which is basically just CBT.
Yeah, it's pretty, It's good. I mean, honestly, like, I think if you have been ignoring these books or not wanting to read any Sanderson because he's Mormon and you're like, ugh, no, I say give it a shot. Honestly, pick up a book and give it a shot. See what you think. My suggestion to anybody who wants to enter the Cosmere is to start with Mistborn personally, because I think it's more accessible. But if you really like war, Stormlight's the way to start. Honestly, if you love war, if you're like, man, my favorite parts of Game of Thrones are the long descriptions of the battles, Stormlight's the one for you. But if you're more of a rogue, go Mistborn.
I'm just over here like Warbreaker, but
I
mean, yeah.
See, I think the magic is best in Mistborn.
Yeah,
it's the coolest, in my opinion.
Mechanically, the most interesting.
Yeah, noting there's a shit ton of magic in these books. We didn't even scratch the surface of the Cosmere. This was really more about Wind and Truth and Brandon himself. But.
For sure. Let's move on to five questions.
Oh, Delia.
Delia, you have not been on the show before. We're going to ask you five questions to wrap things up. Molly, you want to start?
Sure. Hey, Delia, what is a game you've played recently that you really enjoyed?
So every Wednesday, part of my self-care routine is going and doing Trivia Mafia trivia at my local Luce.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Always, always a high point of my week.
That's awesome. Do you have a regular team?
Yep. Our team is We're Just Here for the Hams.
H-A-M-S, hams?
No, the beer.
H-A-M-M-S.
The beer refreshing.
I thought it was a funny joke.
Yeah, no, that's great.
You want to handle two?
Sure. Delia, tell us what science fact or discovery you think is really fucking cool.
So it turns out it's still kind of in its infancy a little bit with study, but I've read up a lot that they are starting to notice, and of course it's going to be transgender related because I'm me. they're noticing that in some functional MRI scans that the brain of a trans woman more maps to a stereotypical cis woman's brain function.
That's great.
That's really interesting.
There's been so much neat stuff with brain scans like that.
My brain looks like every time I take one of those tests that's like, what's your gender? It's always like, you're more of a boy. And I'm like, I'm not, but that's fine.
Question three.
Yeah.
Where do you get your sense of right and wrong from? Because we assume it might not be religion.
So honestly, while I was raised in a very religious upbringing, I'm a recovering Catholic like many. it was my mom. More than anything else, it was my mom. And a lot of it comes from the fact that she was just accepting and loving towards people. She definitely had her opinions on what was right and wrong, but she never beat people over the head with it. She just gave her opinion and moved on.
All right. She just prayed for them later when they were wrong.
Oh, I'm sure.
That was my grandma too. It was like, oh, okay. Well, like you're going on the list.
Hey, her favorite cousin was a gay man who was with his partner for 55 years.
Oh, wow. That's
or
amazing.
So.
Yeah.
Before one of them passed away, rest his soul.
All right. Well, question four. If you could build a robot to perfectly perform one chore or task for you for the rest of your life, what task would you choose?
Folding laundry.
Oh, oof. Yeah.
Would the robot put it away for you too?
Yes, absolutely.
So let me just walk you through. So you put it in the washer, you move it from the washer to the dryer. The robot takes it out of the dryer, or you take it out of the dryer?
No, the robot can take it out of the dryer too.
Take it out of the dryer too. All right. So they take it out. So when the dryer is done, the robot's like, it's my time to shine.
100%. Because, you know, I live in the world where it's, you know, 30 minutes to wash, an hour to dry, 5 to 7 business days to put away.
I live in that house too.
We got a couple of husky blooded dogs in this house who shed like huskies, so we can't end a Molly. We can't really do that.
I don't relate.
Husky blooded Molly.
I have a surplus of executive function, and a lot of it is directed toward not having wrinkly clothes.
Tim, bring it home.
It's a question number five. What is a movie or TV show you think everyone should watch?
So there have been many over the years, but probably the one that's had the most impact for me in probably the recent 5 years, I think, is when it came out, was the movie Moxie.
Oh, what is that?
I don't know. If
it's on Netflix. It's about a high school girl who has this sudden, blatantly awakening to the bullshit patriarchy.
Oh, wow.
And she basically leads a rebellion in her school, starting with creating a zine.
Okay.
Hmm. You know, we did see this, I thought. I think we did see this. Younger, like middle school or teenage or something, right?
High school, yeah.
Yeah, and doesn't she, like, take her mom's old punk jacket and listen to some...
Oh, maybe we did.
Yes, yes, she does.
Cherry Bomb is prominently featured in the movie, I think, too. Yeah. Yeah. I do remember that. That was enjoyable, yeah. I like seeing the youths take on punk culture. It warms my heart. Delia, one more question for you. Do you have any final thoughts about Stormlight Archive or Brandon Sanderson before we go?
So I could literally fill a 2-hour podcast just rambling about Sanderson and the Stormlight Archive. I think the biggest takeaway that I've gotten from reading the first arc, because remember, this is just the first of two arcs. Mm-hmm. From day one, they literally, from the prologue, he set the grounds that mental health is an important thing to the series, and it's going to continue to be important. Mm-hmm. And I think this book really reaches to the fans who might be struggling with depression, might be struggling with ADHD, because tell me Lopin doesn't have ADHD.
Never thought of that, yeah.
And makes them feel represented, and also plants the idea in their brain that there are things you can do to help improve your life. Mm. And that was my biggest takeaway of the whole Stormlight Archive so far.
Nothing is forever. Nobody's fixed.
Yeah.
In one way.
Yeah.
Like fixed, not resolved, but fixed, like stuck.
One might go so far as to say journey before destination.
Journey before destination.
Words are accepted.
All right. Well, thank you, Delia. It's been a pleasure having you on. Thanks for joining us to geek out about Brandon Sanderson and Wind of Truth. If you, listener, read Wind and Truth and have thoughts on Sando or the Cosmere, we want to hear about them. Are we filthy Mormon apologists? Please tell us. We would value your opinion.
I would be happy to apologize for Mormons.
If we've got it wrong, we want to hear about it for sure.
Sorry, it's all I can think of.
But with that, you know, you might be listening to this episode early on Patreon. If so, thank you very much. If you're not a patron, you can throw us even just like $1 a month to get episodes early. Would be great. It helps pay the bills, which we just paid, and it was complicated. Otherwise, we'll be back on a future Tuesday with more geeky, godless fun. Bye.
Bye. Oh, dang it. I forgot to ask if anybody in these books has to wear magic underwear.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Yeah. Like, I couldn't remember Dalinar's name.
Oh,
what
yeah.
the fuck?